Level 3, Certificate in ESOL, International All Modes Examination. Section 1, Listening. I'm going to give you the instructions for this part of the test. You will hear this sound at the start of each piece. Remember to transfer your answers to the optical mark form before the end of the exam. Now open your question paper and look at Part 1, Section A. Listening, Part 1, Section A. Listen to the first section of a radio program in which Julia Delaney, the famous crime writer, talks about her work to radio presenter Stefan Simmons. For questions 1 to 5, choose the correct answer, A, B or C. You will hear Section A twice. You have 1 minute to read the questions for Section A.
Welcome to Talking Books, our weekly programme about books and writers. Now, you avid readers of crime fiction, can you sift through the evidence and discover the identity of today's studio guest? She's written over 30 crime novels, 10 of which feature her favourite policeman, Inspector Hugo Hughes. All her books are currently in print. She's been translated into over 20 languages, with more in the pipeline. And her reputation goes from strength to strength. You've all guessed by now, of course, so without more ado, let's welcome the Queen of the Murder Mystery, Julia Delaney.
Thank you, Stefan. Can I say what a pleasure it is to be here?
Julia, we'd like to know what makes you so successful. Let's start by asking you what processes you go through when you write your books.
Well, in the very early days, I used to look around for inspiration for my characters. Maybe a neighbour, the cleaning lady, even my son's piano teacher. But it was impossible to imagine such people actually committing murder. So I decided not to use real people and to create characters from scratch. And I've followed that principle ever since.
So, Inspector Hugo Hughes is a totally imaginary character?
More or less. But if I'm on the train or in a restaurant, I may see something and say to myself, Hugo would look good in a shirt like that, or that's how Hugo would hold his wine glass, and I jot it down in my notebook. So all these small, real-life details help to build up the character.
Now, what about the plots? There are only so many ways people can be murdered, after all.
Yes, there has to be a body, that goes without saying. I get an idea, maybe a newspaper story, you know, wealthy industrialist poisoned by gold-digging wife, or unfaithful wife stabbed by jealous husband, and these bare facts rattle around in my head for ages, and then suddenly everything clicks and I have my plot.
So then you just sit down and type it all up?
No, not exactly. I always know who the murderer is, but I still have to sort out all the practical details. New characters may creep in and original ones disappear, so I'm never quite sure when I start a book how exactly it's going to finish.
Something of a journey into the unknown. Thank you, Julia. We'll be back after the break.
Now listen again.
Welcome to Talking Books, our weekly programme about books and writers. Now, you avid readers of crime fiction, can you sift through the evidence and discover the identity of today's studio guest? She's written over 30 crime novels, 10 of which feature her favourite policeman, Inspector Hugo Hughes. All her books are currently in print. She's been translated into over 20 languages, with more in the pipeline. And her reputation goes from strength to strength. You've all guessed by now, of course. So without more ado, let's welcome the Queen of the Murder Mystery, Julia Delaney.
Thank you, Stefan. Can I say what a pleasure it is to be here?
Julia, we'd like to know what makes you so successful. Let's start by asking you what processes you go through when you write your books.
Well, in the very early days, I used to look around for inspiration for my characters. Maybe a neighbour, the cleaning lady, even my son's piano teacher. But it was impossible to imagine such people actually committing murder, so I decided not to use real people and to create characters from scratch. And I've followed that principle ever since.
So, Inspector Hugo Hughes is a totally imaginary character?
More or less. But if I'm on the train or in a restaurant, I may see something and say to myself, Hugo would look good in a shirt like that, or that's how Hugo would hold his wine glass, and I jot it down in my notebook. So all these small, real-life details help to build up the character.
Now, what about the plots? There are only so many ways people can be murdered, after all.
Yes, there has to be a body, that goes without saying. I get an idea, maybe a newspaper story, you know, wealthy industrialist poisoned by gold-digging wife, or unfaithful wife stabbed by jealous husband, and these bare facts rattle around in my head for ages, and then suddenly everything clicks and I have my plot.
So then you just sit down and type it all up?
No, not exactly. I always know who the murderer is, but I still have to sort out all the practical details. New characters may creep in and original ones disappear, so I'm never quite sure when I start a book how exactly it's going to finish.
Something of a journey into the unknown. Thank you, Julia. We'll be back after the break.
That is the end of Part 1, Section A of the listening test. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. English Speaking Board, Level 3. Listening, Part 1, Section B. Listen to the second section of a radio programme in which Julia Delaney and Stefan Simmons continue their discussion about crime fiction. For questions 6 to 10, choose the correct answer A, B, or C. You will hear section B twice. You now have 1 minute to read the questions for section B.
And what about the actual process of writing, Julia? Do you have a special place to write? Do you write at certain times?
It's essential that you're not disturbed once the writing starts. And if you work from home, as I do, there are all sorts of distractions. The phone, the postman, even someone singing in the shower. So I retreat to my summer house at the bottom of the garden. And I stay there from 10 in the morning until 4 o'clock.
With a no-entry sign on the door?
Yes, indeed. And nobody, absolutely nobody, is allowed to disturb me during that time. As a writer, you have to be very self-disciplined. You have to force yourself to write every day, whether you feel like it or not. My family will tell you that I'm very difficult to live with when I'm in the middle of something, because when you leave your imaginary world at the end of the day, you feel quite irritable, and the last thing you want to do is come down to earth into domesticity, getting the car serviced, taking the dog for a walk and the like. And when you finish the book, which may have taken a year or more of your life, you feel very empty, just as though a close friend had died. Incidentally, I would like to say thank you to my wonderful husband Max, who is so patient and long-suffering and has really put his own career in the civil service on the back burner in order to support me. I'd be completely lost without him.
Julia, we can't have a discussion about your work without mentioning Inspector Hugo Hughes. He's been around a long time, hasn't he?
Well, I suppose he has. He first appeared in Death on the Golf Course in 1985, and he's been making regular appearances ever since. And do you know, in all that time, he hasn't aged at all. He's still only 42.
Don't you ever feel tempted to kill him off or let him retire?
Well, he doesn't get any nearer retirement age, so that's probably not going to happen. But you never know, maybe a newly released criminal looking for revenge might come looking for him and gun him down in the street. But all my readers would be devastated, just as people were when Sherlock Holmes was killed off by Arthur Conan Doyle. And as you know, he had to bow to public pressure and resurrect Sherlock Holmes. I certainly wouldn't want to do that with Hugo. Not that Hugo is in the same league as Holmes, any more than I am in the same league as Conan Doyle. Anyway, Hugo even has his own website, you know, and I get dozens of emails asking all sorts of questions about him. What is his shoe size? Where does he go on holiday? Why isn't he married?
You sound as though you're very fond of him.
Let's just say that I know him better than I know myself. And as long as I keep writing, Hugo Hughes will keep on investigating crime and bringing criminals to justice.
Julia Delaney, thank you.
Now listen again.
And what about the actual process of writing, Julia? Do you have a special place to write? Do you write at certain times?
It's essential that you're not disturbed once the writing starts. And if you work from home, as I do, there are all sorts of distractions. The phone, the postman, even someone singing in the shower. So I retreat to my summer house at the bottom of the garden. And I stay there from 10 in the morning until 4 o'clock.
With a no-entry sign on the door?
Yes, indeed. And nobody, absolutely nobody, is allowed to disturb me during that time. As a writer, you have to be very self-disciplined. You have to force yourself to write every day, whether you feel like it or not. My family will tell you that I'm very difficult to live with when I'm in the middle of something, because when you leave your imaginary world at the end of the day, you feel quite irritable, and the last thing you want to do is come down to earth into domesticity, getting the car serviced, taking the dog for a walk and the like. And when you finish the book, which may have taken a year or more of your life, you feel very empty, just as though a close friend had died. Incidentally, I would like to say thank you to my wonderful husband Max, who is so patient and long-suffering and has really put his own career in the civil service on the back burner in order to support me. I'd be completely lost without him.
Julia, we can't have a discussion about your work without mentioning Inspector Hugo Hughes. He's been around a long time, hasn't he?
Well, I suppose he has. He first appeared in Death on the Golf Course in 1985, and he's been making regular appearances ever since. And do you know, in all that time, he hasn't aged at all. He's still only 42.
Don't you ever feel tempted to kill him off or let him retire?
Well, he doesn't get any nearer retirement age, so that's probably not going to happen. But you never know, maybe a newly released criminal looking for revenge might come looking for him and gun him down in the street. But all my readers would be devastated, just as people were when Sherlock Holmes was killed off by Arthur Conan Doyle. And as you know, he had to bow to public pressure and resurrect Sherlock Holmes. I certainly wouldn't want to do that with Hugo. Not that Hugo is in the same league as Holmes, any more than I am in the same league as Conan Doyle. Anyway, Hugo even has his own website, you know, and I get dozens of emails asking all sorts of questions about him. What is his shoe size? Where does he go on holiday? Why isn't he married?
You sound as though you're very fond of him.
Let's just say that I know him better than I know myself. And as long as I keep writing, Hugo Hughes will keep on investigating crime and bringing criminals to justice.
Julia Delaney, thank you.
That is the end of Part 1, Section B of the listening test. Please turn to Part 2. English Speaking Board, Level 3. Listening, Part 2. Listen to three conversations. For questions 11 to 20, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C. You will hear each conversation twice. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Conversation 1.
Morning, Dr. Hall. I've got Minnie in the cat basket here. Say hello to Dr. Hall, Minnie.
What seems to be the trouble?
I'm not sure. Minnie's so listless, aren't you, darling? Just lies in her basket all day. She's not eating, which is not like her at all. Her breathing is very laboured, with a sort of rattle in her chest, and her coat looks all matted.
Well, let's have a look at her. Now, Minnie, I'm just going to examine you. She definitely seems to be rather under the weather. How long has she been like this?
Oh, it's been coming on over the last few days. But she's never been really right since she had that kidney infection last year.
I remember. Well, she's getting on a bit, isn't she? How old is she now?
Nearly 15.
That's a good age for a cat. They don't last forever, you know.
Oh, don't say that. I'd be completely lost without Minnie. She's Mummy's baby, isn't she?
Well, she's not in extremis at the moment. She's got a dose of cat flu, that's all. I'll prescribe some antibiotics and she'll be right as rain in no time.
Cat flu? Oh, I hope I'm not going to catch it.
Don't worry. It can't be transmitted to humans. You're quite safe. Now, take this prescription to the nurse and she'll sort out Minnie's medication for you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Hall. Say goodbye, Minnie.
Now listen again.
Morning, Dr. Hall. I've got Minnie in the cat basket here. Say hello to Dr. Hall, Minnie.
What seems to be the trouble?
I'm not sure. Minnie's so listless, aren't you, darling? Just lies in her basket all day. She's not eating, which is not like her at all. Her breathing is very laboured, with a sort of rattle in her chest, and her coat looks all matted.
Well, let's have a look at her. Now, Minnie, I'm just going to examine you. She definitely seems to be rather under the weather. How long has she been like this?
Oh, it's been coming on over the last few days. But she's never been really right since she had that kidney infection last year.
I remember. Well, she's getting on a bit, isn't she? How old is she now?
Nearly 15.
That's a good age for a cat. They don't last forever, you know.
Oh, don't say that. I'd be completely lost without Minnie. She's Mummy's baby, isn't she?
Well, she's not in extremis at the moment. She's got a dose of cat flu, that's all. I'll prescribe some antibiotics and she'll be right as rain in no time.
Cat flu? Oh, I hope I'm not going to catch it.
Don't worry. It can't be transmitted to humans. You're quite safe. Now, take this prescription to the nurse and she'll sort out Minnie's medication for you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Hall. Say goodbye, Minnie.
Conversation 2.
Richard, guess what? Edward and Helen have invited us to spend a fortnight with them at their villa in Portugal. Helen's been showing me some photos of the place. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
Well, that's really very kind of them, I must say. Where is this villa exactly, Jenny?
It's on the coast, not far from Lisbon, so we can explore the city if we want to, as well as being near the sea. Oh, by the way, they've asked another couple as well.
Oh dear, I thought there would be a snag. Do we know them?
I'll have to come clean and tell you. It's Jeff and Sue.
But not those two. They're just as bad as each other. Jenny, you know I can't stand them. Jeff's such a pompous old bore and Sue's a complete pain, taking hours to get ready for anything. Surely you haven't forgotten how she made us late for the theatre that time? Absolutely pathetic. She decided just as we were leaving that her nail polish didn't match her dress and kept us all hanging around while she went back upstairs to redo her nails. I ask you. I said then that I wanted nothing to do with either of them ever again. And now you expect me to spend my precious holiday with them. I want to relax when I go away. I'm not going to face those two over the breakfast table every morning for 2 weeks, I can tell you. You'll just have to find some excuse and say we can't go after all.
You're completely overreacting. Anyway, I've already told Helen that we'd love to go.
You had no business doing that without asking me first, and you must have realised that the prospect of going on holiday with Sue and Jeff was a complete non-starter.
But what am I going to say to Helen?
You got yourself into this mess. You'll have to get yourself out of it. I'm not going to Portugal, and that's flat.
Richard, you're being very unreasonable.
Now listen again.
Richard, guess what? Edward and Helen have invited us to spend a fortnight with them at their villa in Portugal. Helen's been showing me some photos of the place. It looks absolutely gorgeous.
Well, that's really very kind of them, I must say. Where is this villa exactly, Jenny?
It's on the coast, not far from Lisbon, so we can explore the city if we want to, as well as being near the sea. Oh, by the way, they've asked another couple as well.
Oh dear, I thought there would be a snag. Do we know them?
I'll have to come clean and tell you. It's Jeff and Sue.
But not those two. They're just as bad as each other. Jenny, you know I can't stand them. Jeff's such a pompous old bore and Sue's a complete pain, taking hours to get ready for anything. Surely you haven't forgotten how she made us late for the theatre that time? Absolutely pathetic. She decided just as we were leaving that her nail polish didn't match her dress and kept us all hanging around while she went back upstairs to redo her nails. I ask you, I said then that I wanted nothing to do with either of them ever again, and now you expect me to spend my precious holiday with them. I want to relax when I go away. I'm not going to face those two over the breakfast table every morning for 2 weeks, I can tell you. You'll just have to find some excuse and say we can't go after all.
You're completely overreacting. Anyway, I've already told Helen that we'd love to go.
You had no business doing that without asking me first, and you must have realised that the prospect of going on holiday with Sue and Jeff was a complete non-starter.
But what am I going to say to Helen?
You got yourself into this mess. You'll have to get yourself out of it. I'm not going to Portugal, and that's flat.
Richard, you're being very unreasonable.
Conversation 3.
Vanessa, good to see you. How are you doing? How about a coffee?
Fine, and I'd love a coffee.
I must tell you the latest. Angela's split up with Tim. He's ditched her and she's in a terrible state.
Well, it was on the cards, wasn't it? Remember Tim's birthday when we all went to that Italian restaurant and he and Angela did nothing but bicker all evening?
Yes, it really was a bit much. He kept criticising her all the time, and she was trying to get us to gang up against him and making insulting remarks about his family to boot.
I didn't know where to put myself. Then they seemed to make it up and got all lovey-dovey for a while. And now the inevitable has happened. Tim's gone. And I can't say I blame him for leaving, even though his behaviour leaves a lot to be desired at times.
They really weren't suited, you know. They say opposites attract, but you couldn't find a more ill-assorted couple than those two, like chalk and cheese. They were always falling out over the most trivial things.
You're right, Carol. They had absolutely nothing in common. He's all sporty and into the great outdoors, and Angela's a real city girl. All she wants to do is go shopping for designer clothes and take Tim with her to carry the bags.
He put his foot down over that, you know. So recently she's been going shopping on her own or with a girlfriend. I told her, Angela, there's nothing men hate more than being dragged around clothes shops. And do you know what she said? Well, he'd do it if he really loved me.
Typical. I'm quite surprised she's so upset now he's cleared off. I expect she'll be on the phone as we speak, pouring her heart out to anyone who'll listen and probably having hysterics.
I know she's not your favourite person, Vanessa, but I can't help feeling a bit sorry for her.
Yes, me too. She's got nobody to carry her shopping for her. Poor Angela.
Now listen again.
Vanessa, good to see you. How are you doing? How about a coffee?
Fine, and I'd love a coffee.
I must tell you the latest. Angela's split up with Tim. He's ditched her and she's in a terrible state.
Well, it was on the cards, wasn't it? Remember Tim's birthday when we all went to that Italian restaurant and he and Angela did nothing but bicker all evening?
Yes, it really was a bit much. He kept criticising her all the time, and she was trying to get us to gang up against him and making insulting remarks about his family to boot.
I didn't know where to put myself. Then they seemed to make it up and got all lovey-dovey for a while. And now the inevitable has happened. Tim's gone. And I can't say I blame him for leaving, even though his behaviour leaves a lot to be desired at times.
They really weren't suited, you know. They say opposites attract, but you couldn't find a more ill-assorted couple than those two, like chalk and cheese. They were always falling out over the most trivial things.
You're right, Carol. They had absolutely nothing in common. He's all sporty and into the great outdoors, and Angela's a real city girl. All she wants to do is go shopping for designer clothes and take Tim with her to carry the bags.
He put his foot down over that, you know. So recently she's been going shopping on her own or with a girlfriend. I told her, Angela, there's nothing men hate more than being dragged around clothes shops. And do you know what she said? Well, he'd do it if he really loved me.
Typical. I'm quite surprised she's so upset now he's cleared off. I expect she'll be on the phone as we speak, pouring her heart out to anyone who'll listen and probably having hysterics.
I know she's not your favourite person, Vanessa, but I can't help feeling a bit sorry for her.
Yes, me too. She's got nobody to carry her shopping for her. Poor Angela.
That is the end of the listening section.